Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. We're coming to you live from our studios at Prashanthinilam. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. And it's that fortnight where we go through the beautiful conversations that have been recorded between Dr. Hislop, one of Swami's devotees from the United States, and Swami and few other visitors who were also present during that moment. These compilations have been present in the form of the book Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Sat Sai Baba, a wonderful book. And as we go through this, we see that the conversation meanders through many useful and profound subjects. And there is no one strain or one theme other than the fact that here are spiritual aspirants wanting to know from Swami the various ways of looking at different aspects of life and sadhana and such important topics. And as we're going to see today, it's a continuation of where we left off a couple of weeks back. And even in this episode, Swami speaks of some things which are very, very profound. Well, hopefully, along with all of you, we will also be able to absorb and understand some of these wonderful answers that Swami is giving. But before that, we'll begin by offering our most loving pranams at Swami's lotus feet, and let's invite Arvind to join all of us. Saram, Arvind.
Saram, Prem. You know, when we go through a work...
Saram, Prem. It's so amazing that we are having this opportunity to go through a work like this book, The Conversations with Sai. Because, you know, many times when we have interacted with Swami, we have seen that it is not as if every session with Swami is a session wherein we get a chance to ask questions and Swami gives answers. Many of the talks on the portico where Swami would come and start speaking to the students, and in our times, particularly with Anil Kumar sir or Bhagya sir, we would notice that Swami speaks on a range of subjects, everything in the world, you know, from the news, from the, what's happening in Puttaparthi, what projects are being planned, what was the food in the hostel, and what is the academic schedule, who has passed in the examinations, what are the ranks of the students, everything Swami would be speaking, so much so that for a casual mind, as we sit there, it is beautiful to see Swami from close quarters and enjoy listening to him and seeing him. But honestly, it would not feel like this is some spiritual wisdom that is coming. That's because in order to receive spiritual wisdom, the mind has to be in a ready state. And because we would assume that this is a casual conversation, everything would be interpreted in that manner. I say this because many times later on, you know, be it Anil Kumar sir or Bhagya sir, in the class or when we meet them on the road or when they visit the hostel, they would narrate the happenings of that day, the conversation they had with Swami, the same conversation that we all heard sitting there. But when they narrate, it would strike us at the heart, it would strike us more deeply, because you realize that there is so much wisdom even in what Swami was speaking apparently so casually. And you wonder that how is it that I missed it? As Swami would say, when the rain falls, it falls equally everywhere. But if your vessel is not filled, it is possibly because your vessel was kept upturned. Any vessel that's facing the rain will get filled up. And whatever is the size of the vessel, that much water will get filled up. You know, the smaller your heart, the smaller will it be able to... The lesser amount of God's love will it be able to hold. The larger it is, the more it can hold. But if it's in a casual state, you know, if it is not in a ready state to receive, then it will not receive anything in spite of the most torrential downpour. So therefore, though every interaction with Bhagwan is a wisdom bestowing experience, every word of Bhagwan is the Veda itself, if one is not in an alert state of mind, one will miss all the wisdom. And that is how I think we, some of us, have missed Bhagwan's wisdom, because we were in a casual state of mind. And therefore, when a setting is there like this, it's an interview room setting, there are almost no distractions, it's only you and Bhagwan. And the stated objective of the interview is also to clear doubts. That is the objective with which Dr. Hislop would go in. So it's almost like, imagine if they would tell us that today Swami is going to come out and interact with the students and he would like to clear all the doubts that you have. There have been some sessions like that. And when we look back at those sessions, they have been memorable and we possibly have recorded them and we have felt that Swami gave us so much of enlightenment and wisdom. That's because, you know, a setting has been created that today Swami is going to answer doubts. Actually, every day also Swami is doing the same, but that setting has not been created. So, because we are human, we need all these. We need a setting, we need our mind to be in a receptive state, and then we need also, you know, the physical attributes to be like it's a question and answer session. When all that happens, we seem to be able to receive wisdom better from the avatar. And all that has happened here, that is why it is indeed a great blessing that it has happened in a conversation with Swami like this in the interview room. Because though Swami is showering wisdom all the while, when it happens in a setting like this, we are able to better appreciate and better absorb it. And for that, we must be grateful to both Swami and Dr. Hislop.
Many of the conversations that we've been privy to when we were there, you know, sometimes Swami would ask, do you have any questions? You want to ask some things? At least, I think, from my point of view or from what I've heard from a few others, invariably, I think when we would ask Swami something, it was merely to, you know, have Swami around for some more time and, you know, to keep engaging Swami. I mean, eventually you will ask something which is important and which has been troubling you and Swami would answer. But invariably it would be like, you know, if you don't ask something, then Swami might go away. Right? Many times it would happen. You just want to engage Swami so that he is there for as long as you can, you know, possibly have him. But the reason why this conversation probably is very important is, as we have mentioned so many times before, you know, it is a person, it is the attitude of the person who is asking, the mental makeup of the person who is asking. In Hislop's own words, you know, in the introduction when he says how in the other book, My Baba and I, he talks about his introduction to Swami. You know, that fact has been established that he is finding in Swami something very, very profound that he's been seeking for a long time. So here is the answers which he knows that this is the answer, but it may or may not appeal to his intellectual understanding at that moment. So you can clearly see that he's trying to ask further questions, not because he disagrees with Swami, not because what Swami is saying does not seem to be appropriate, but he's trying to understand really deeply what Swami is trying to say, and Swami is also explaining in such a manner so that he doesn't miss out what is important to him. And the other beautiful thing is, I mean, in various parts, Dr. Hislop would specifically ask, Swami, what is it for me? What is it that you want me to do or me to follow? Or am I on the right path? And so at such times, you know, I think in one of the conversations we went through, Swami said, no, I will tell you separately. You know, I don't want to tell it to you when everybody else is there. But few places Swami does say that, okay, this is what you have done so far and this is good enough for you. So in many ways, you know, and I think in some places you can also clearly make out the way Swami is giving answers to some of the questions the visitor is asking. It's not that Swami is disregarding what the visitor is asking, but maybe that's all that visitor can understand or can grasp when Swami is giving those answers.
When you mention visitors, you know, what strikes me is some of the questions that the visitors have asked, honestly, you and me sitting here, we wonder, oh my God, how could they ask such a thing, or how could such a trivial thing be bothering them? Now that is another point, you know, being the interview room, you don't have the fear that something may be trivial or something may seem absurd. This happens usually when Swami is sitting, not only with Swami, with any teacher, with anybody, you know, in public, we possibly don't ask the things that are bothering us the most because we think that possibly they're too trivial, because maybe it is my fault that I have not understood, everybody else has understood. So whether it is a classroom teacher or the universal teacher, when we are up close and private with them, we open up more because we feel that there is nobody else around to judge me or mock me. All these fears come because all said and done, we are multiple layers. Our personality has multiple layers, you know, and ego is definitely one of those layers that is there. And therefore, since this setting was in the interview room, it becomes even more candid, it becomes even more honest and transparent in that sense, because the person who is asking the question apart from having the intensity and yearning to know, like you said, in public when we would ask question, we would think of a question that is, in quotes, spiritual enough for Swami to answer, and again, in quotes, would be of general interest to everyone around. But in the interview room, all that is gone. They are genuinely interested in knowing those answers. That is why they have been called for the interview. And second, they don't have any fear of somebody else judging me or thinking wrong about me. I don't care. I need to get this. So both have come in. Along with the yearning and eagerness to know the answer, there is also that freedom from fear, the transparency and that openness. And that is why this work becomes so magnificent.
And as we were seeing last week, I mean, the discussion was quite deep in that sense, because the people who were gathered there, I mean, among many things, it was a very assorted conversation that we saw last week. There were questions about, somebody was asking about their health, they're having some leg pain, and then there were talks about, I think, was it in this conversation they asked about Kali Yuga and,
yes,
you know, is it still...
Somebody asked whether Swami can grow hair.
Right. And Swami materialized a lot of objects. And then there was that short discussion about the Kalpavriksham. And Swami was saying that, I mean, Swami was making a reference to the absurdity of worshipping the tree, which was merely an instrument. You know, in that sense, Swami stood by the tree and Swami plucked all those different kind of objects from it. The tree had no speciality except for the fact that, you know, it was instrumental. It was an instrument in Swami's hand, like any of us are. But in the process, the instruments get worshipped. You know, you should have gratitude to the instrument, but the instrument itself cannot give you anything. Mm. And that's why Swami says, I am the actual Kalpavriksha. You know, don't think that the tree is going to give you anything. I am the one who's actually going to grant you whatever you want. And in that process, I think as it is going, the conversation drifts towards meditation. Meditation, and one of the devotees asks about peace. How do you get peace? And very interesting, Swami starts off a discussion about food in the beginning. Swami says it all matters about the food that you take. And then I think we made a reference to the Bhrigu-vali, where it starts with the food. It says that, you know, everything begins with food, and how the food becomes your body, the body becomes the source for your mind, and why food is also important. And Swami says that, I think Swami used to tell one Chinnakatha of a sadhu who, when he meditates, starts getting the urge to steal something.
Actually, the story, very interesting, Prem, because just yesterday I had a talk and somebody asked me about the importance of ahara, which is food.
Okay.
Very interestingly, I know it's a slight detour, but when Dr. Narasimhan asked Swami about what is the message that the villagers should be given. Because for those who don't know, Dr. Narasimhan is the director of the Sri Sat Sai Mobile Hospital project. And Swami told him that five things, if kept in mind, they will contribute not just to the physical health of the being, but also to the mental and spiritual health. And what are the five things? Swami said the five things are vichara, thought; uchara, word; achara, action; ahara, food; and vihara, your company and where you stay. So beautiful, all the aras, you know, it comes as vichara, uchara, achara, ahara, vihara. So in this context, when somebody asked me about ahara, I gave them this precise chinnakatha, where Swami states about a sannyasi, sannyasi means a renunciant, who has gone to a lady's home to have food. Because sannyasis live like that. Whatever food comes their way, they have. And this lady has invited him inside. And as he's eating the food, he sees that the lady has served him in silverware. And he just feels that, let me just take away that silver tumbler. It's so valuable, she won't even know it. She won't even notice it. But somehow he refrains from doing that. And later when he comes, he starts feeling very bad. He feels, why is it that I got that urge to steal that? I am a renunciant who has given up everything. And Swami tells that his guru explains to this sannyasi that the food that you eat is so important. When that food is being, not just whether the food that is being cooked is from a clean source, the thoughts of the farmer growing the food, the thoughts of the person who is selling those vegetables and foodstuff, the thoughts of the person who is cooking that food, all of them get into that food. And therefore, you get influenced by the food that you eat. And you don't know what were the thoughts of any of these people who did that to your food. Because of that, you got these thoughts. And later, you know, Swami goes on to explain after telling this Chinnakatha that in the ancient times, people believed in Swayampaka, those who wanted to pursue a spiritual life. They believed in Swayampaka, which means they would grow their own vegetables, they would harvest it, and they would cut, chop the vegetables, cook their food, and then have their food. In that sense, I just feel that possibly even if you get dirty thoughts, you can be assured that it's your own dirt, you know. What is there in you is only coming back to you. But then Swami goes on to say that becomes difficult to do in the modern times. You can't grow your own food, cut, eat. You can't. Kali Yuga like that. Possibly even there's no enough land resources to do that. Everybody doesn't own a piece of land where they can grow their own food. And that is why Swami says it is so important that you offer the food to God via the food prayer. When you make an offering to God, when you do a naivedyam to God, it automatically becomes prasadam. Prasadam means food that is consecrated. And once anything comes in touch with God, it becomes pure. It's like, however dirty the body may be, when it comes in touch with the soap doesn't get dirty, the body gets cleaned. That's what happens. That's what happens at the vibrational level when we offer it to God. And that's how Swami says, that's why Swami says that it's so important that you do Brahmarpanam, that you offer it to God, whatever food you eat, because you are not able to ensure all these. But yes, coming back to the point which triggered this long monologue, food is so very important, and it is no wonder that when somebody asks about getting peace and, you know, getting better meditation, Swami delves deeply into food and food habits.
In fact, the conversation, I mean, the series of questions which leads to that is, one of the visitor asks how to get devotion to God. And Swami says for devotion, confidence is important. And for confidence, Swami says food is important. And I think the point where we stopped, actually Swami, the visitor was asking about peace of mind. And Swami connects it back to that initial question by saying that for peace of mind, you know, it becomes natural to get that peace of mind when you have thoughts about God. In fact, Swami very emphatically says that only thoughts of God and intense love for Him bring peace. As worldly thoughts diminish, thoughts of God increase. I think that was the point where we stopped last time, that description which Swami was giving about the importance of giving up worldly desires, and even as you start thinking more and more of God, all of these worldly desires will drop off, and that's when you will get peace of mind.
At that point, it appears as though the visitor is not able to make the connection. And so he says, I quote, "But I wanted to know about peace." And Swami says, "Yes, if the desires are cut off one by one, then there is peace. When the desires go one by one, then there is dry mind. Then there is peace of mind. Swami cannot give peace of mind. You must work for it yourselves. First, stop the questioning and ask, who am I? This is my body, my mind, my intelligence. But who is this mine? Who is it that claims the ownership of that which is declared to be mine? My indicates ownership. That my is the life. As long as there is life in the body, there is this connection between the my and the intellect. My body, my house, my land. But the moment you remove the life from the body, there is no my or sense of possession. Life is God." This is what Swami explains. Of course, Swami talks a little more, but I thought we'll break it at this point and have a little discussion. Swami clearly says here that peace of mind is something that cannot be conferred. It's almost like telling, give me good muscles. A good diet can be given to you, a good exercise plan can be given to you. But finally, it's up to you to follow the diet regimen and the exercise regimen and build your own muscles. In the same way, it is like Swami is saying that I can tell you what is to be done, but finally you have to do it. You can take the horse to the water, the horse has to drink. That is what Swami is conveying here, that peace of mind cannot be conferred, you must work for it yourself.
And the other interesting point that Swami is making is, you know, the two things which Swami is saying. One is, he said, thoughts of God will confer peace of mind, which means thoughts of God will lead to your desires being cut off. And Swami is saying the other way of cutting off the desires is to ponder upon who you are, right? Because it's fundamentally that, you know, so there's example that Swami would give, that if you are a rich man and you're acting in a drama, you're pretending to be a poor man, you will not cry over your poverty. You know, you will pretend as though you're begging for food or you're craving for something which is there. But it's only pretending because deep inside you know who you are. You know that you can afford that and much, much more than that. And that comes only when you're sure of who you are. If you get lost in the illusion of the role that you're playing, then you'll be sucked in by that emotion which you're supposed to portray and not necessarily have to live. And Swami is saying that, you know, there are so many desires which come in your mind. And when you say desire, Swami explains that it is nothing but restlessness. You know, let's say that I desire a car. Making it absolutely simple, it means now I'm without the car. And I'm picturing myself with the car, I will be happier. That me minus the car is sad and me plus the car is going to be happy. So Swami says that the most important thing is not the car there, it is who you are. Do you really need that object to be happy? Yes, you may be happy in the process of getting that, but do you really need that? So Swami is saying that, you know, it all starts with you understanding who you really are. And that will automatically make you, you know, drop some of these desires which are superficial.
As somebody once said, if you think that there is happiness in the car, let me remind you that the happiness lies in whether you own the car or the car is parked in your neighbor's compound.
Right.
So you see, it is not as if that car gives me joy, because if that car is going to give me joy, why don't I go and stand in front of a car showroom? I should keep standing there and keep exuding joy. But it is not. It is ultimately I who is choosing to be happy or not. And that is the reason why even though there are people who have 10 cars, they may possibly not be happy. Because the car is not the source of happiness. Swami would give the example, the popular and common example of a dog chewing a bone. The dog keeps chewing the dry bone so much so that a piece of the bone chips off and, you know, pricks into its gums, because of which the gum starts bleeding. And Swami says the dog starts sucking on its own blood and feels very happy, relishes it, and thinks that the bone is so nutritious and tasty. Then Swami says that it is so foolish. The dog doesn't realize that the blood is coming from its own self. There's nothing in the bone, actually it's a dry bone. In the same way, man holds on to different worldly objects and thinks that they are oozing happiness. The reality is that he himself, man himself, is the source of happiness, but foolishly he is crediting that to these worldly objects, because of which he is pursuing them with all his energy and enthusiasm. Once you realize that you are the source of your own happiness, I think this kind of pursuit and, as you say, desires are automatically cut off. And therefore, as you rightly said, Swami gives two ways to achieve peace. One is start loving God so much that you don't like and love other things as much. Or start this process of inquiry as to who I really am. And that, once you start heading towards your reality of who you really are, automatically what you really need also starts getting defined and starts becoming clear.
And then Swami goes on to explain to that same question. He says, who am I? The answer is, I am God. The body comes and goes, but the Atma is permanent. The body has birth and death, but the spirit does not have any of these. You reach the stage where you say, I am God. But even there is duality, God and I. That is not the full truth. When we breathe, the breath makes the sound of soham. He am I. There is still the body consciousness, the I. But in deep, deep sleep, the declaration he and I falls away and only O and Ma remain, that is Om. There is only the one. And this is the conclusion of that explanation, as we can see. I don't know if the visitor himself is able to understand the depth of what Swami is saying. You know, because the question is something which is not necessarily something which a spiritual aspirant preoccupies himself with. I want peace. That is so universal. Even a businessman would say, I want peace. Even a spiritual aspirant would say, I want peace. Even somebody in the penultimate stage of liberation probably will be saying, I want peace. Mm. And so there is nothing like only a spiritual person will ask that. But the answer which Ami is giving is the ultimate answer, right? This is
an answer that will satisfy anyone.
Right, and this is an answer which is probably applicable to anyone till that last moment. Right, if somebody were to tell you, "I want peace," when we were in school, that's what happened. When we are children, when you go and tell our parents that we want to be happy, they'll tell, "Yeah, you study well, you get a good job, and then you'll have good salary, and then you can be happy," because that is the answer which is appropriate for that time. And if we were to really apply that, like how most of us have applied, then you will realize that when you get there, it's like a mirage, that peace is not there at all.
It has moved. It has moved elsewhere.
In fact, when we are in school, they always give you this, the landmark of the 12th standard board exams. You know, it's almost like the 12 years of schooling is meant only for that 12th standard board exams.
The public examinations that you face in India while moving from school to college.
College or university. It's almost like the school leaving exam or something like that. And it's almost like every teacher will be telling about that 12th exam. You just have to do well in that. And there are...
Life is
set. People are talking of it from your 8th standard, which is like 4 years before it really happens. And I recall one of my teachers in 12th standard telling me that, or 11th standard, the chemistry teacher. She said, all people will tell like this, but believe me, when you go to your college, the same thing will be told to you about some other exam.
Mm.
And it's a race which will never end. And she was saying that it's just that none of your school teachers will ever tell you that. And it's so true, because there is no peace to be got by any of these achievements. Because the craving never goes, that's what Swami would so very beautifully say. When you say that I will be happy if I have this, you are making a proclamation that I am not happy. Mm. And that seed remains, that seed is going to grow with you. Unless and until you get rid of that and say that I am perfect right now, which will come only by answering the question, who am I? That's what Swami is saying. The question is, who am I? The answer is, you are God. It's not going to be any different. You're not going to end up in a different answer. The answer is also given, but when you are convinced that this is the answer, Swami is saying that you will have no more reason to seek anything. And when you have nothing more to seek, there is no more desires. And when there are no more desires, there's going to be peace. And simply said, but that is a life of the spiritual journey all put together.
If you see the last two statements that Swami makes, whether one has experienced it or not, it's so amazing even at an intellectual level. See, the soham, which so means he and hum means am I. So that's how it is translated. Soham meaning he am I. Meaning it proclaims the unity between you and God. But Swami says that also makes it duality, because there is he and I. Two. And Swami would often say that this breath, this Hamsa Gayatri Soham is... So, when you breathe in, and hum, when you breathe out. So, though it is two processes, inhalation and exhalation, in reality, in absolute truth, it is actually one. I mean, inhalation cannot exist without exhalation. Exhalation cannot happen without inhalation. Both have to be together for existence. And it is almost like, at an intellectual level, so easy to understand that just as inhalation and exhalation have to exist, so it is with soham. And therefore, Swami says, in so also, it is the letter or the syllable sa that denotes the other. And in hum, it is the syllable ha that denotes oneself. So, it's actually... Even if you see in English, inhale, exhale, it is the in and ex that determine the difference. Otherwise, it's the same hail and hail, right? I mean, coincidentally, it happens like that even in English. So, to here, it is just the first syllables that denote that. And Swami says, actually, when you go to deep sleep state, that is also gone. So, the sir and her go away. And what remains is only om. Instead of so hum, it becomes only om. And it is so beautiful because... Though Swami has not explicitly stated it, it gives us the potency, the power, the significance and the basis of this Om, the Omkara. No wonder that every mantra begins with Om. No wonder every bhajan session begins with Om. No wonder every Veda mantra, Veda chant begins with Om, because ultimately the entire creation has begun from Om, from the source. What is the source? That is the oneness of the Jivatma and Paramatma. That is what is indicated by the Om. For me personally, this was a beautiful revelation, as I said, at least at an intellectual level, which is Soham minus the duality is Om. So it's so thrilling and beautiful, and I think only Swami can do it so simply and explain it. And as you said, this is the ultimate answer Swami is giving, which is applicable to the greatest spiritual aspirant as well as possibly a businessman in the world.
Right. In fact, Swami very, very beautifully explains that, you know, this is the state in the deep sleep. And I think this is something which Swami would say using many of the what we refer to as the Mahavakyas in the Vedas. And this is one way of Swami explaining it. You know, one thing is Swami's discourses, if you were to look at it critically, invariably the discourse will end with devotion or prema or doing good actions or something like that. But it might start with very, very deep philosophical concepts, Advaitic concepts and Vedantic concepts. So it's very difficult to look at a discourse and say whether Swami is speaking Advaita or Swami is speaking Vishishta Advaita or Dvaita. But sometimes in his discourse, Swami would make this point, there is nothing like Advaita, there is nothing like Dvaita. Because Swami would say that, what do the Advaitins say? They say, Aham Brahmasmi. And Swami will say, where is Advaita in that? You are saying Aham and Brahma. There are two. How can it be Advaita? Mm. And similarly, Swami would say, you know, I am Mahatma Brahma.
Tattvamasi.
Swami is saying there are two.
Thou art that.
Tat is there, Tvam is there. How can it be Advaita? And similarly, Swami is saying here, Soham. The actual Sanskrit splitting of that is Saha and Aham. It is Saha means he and Aham means me. So he and me are one, Swami is saying. So that Saha is also removed and Aham is also removed, and Swami is saying only Om remains. And if I'm not wrong, I think it is a very famous quote of Ramana Maharshi. Mm. He's saying the state in which you are when you are in deep sleep, what we refer to as Sushupti, if you can be in that state when you're awake, then you're realized. He says when you're in deep sleep, you don't even realize that, you are asleep or you're doing this or so and so. I'm in such and such a place. You know, it happens so many times to us when we wake up from a very, very deep sleep. It takes us a couple of seconds to realize where we are or what time of the day it is. You know, is it an afternoon nap or is it a night sleep? So many times when we wake up from a deep sleep, it's because you completely remove yourself from body consciousness. That you're not aware. Only experience that you have of deep sleep is, I'm feeling very, very relaxed and I've had a good sleep. That's the only idea that is left in the mind, because it's a complete body consciousness removal state. And Swami is saying that that alone is the real state. The moment you wake up, you come back into the idea of the body consciousness. Swami is saying that even the fact that I am God is only a concept which is given to you to contemplate on. The real fact is only I am. That alone is the reality.
When you said so much about sleep, you know, my father had been gifted by somebody in the family. He had been gifted a Fitbit, and 3 weeks back I just told my dad, you're not using it, let me start using it. I discovered that this Fitbit does everything, you know, it even records your sleep patterns and everything. And when I analyzed my sleep over the last, say, 10 days, I'm seeing that on an average I sleep about 6 to 6 and a half hours, and they recommend 8 hours. And I don't know, how much ever I try, I can't sleep for 8 hours. I just don't know. Even if I sleep early by 10, I get up early in the morning. So I think for me 6.5 hours is good. But that's not the point. The point I'm trying to make is, in that 6.5 hours, when it analyzes, at max, there is only about 1 hour to 1 hour, 10 minutes of deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the other sleep is just light sleep. What I noticed in my sleep pattern is, about 50 to 60% of my sleep is light sleep. About 20 to 25% of my sleep is REM sleep, what they call it, which is rapid eye movement sleep. That is a phase in which it is lighter than light sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That is the stage where you get all your dreams. And about 5 to 6% is actually awake, you know. I'm awake at night. I also don't know. I'm awake for some time during the night. And about less than 10%. 8 to 9% is deep sleep. That is when the body is completely rejuvenating itself. All the organs, you know, there's a shutdown that happens. The machinery shutdown, everything, you know, it's like a reset, restart. And I noticed in these last 10-15 days itself, when my overall sleep reduces, I don't actually have a problem as long as I get between 50 minutes to 1 hour, 10 minutes of deep sleep. That's all it is. If I get my 1 hour of deep sleep, even if my overall sleep reduces to 4 hours, it's almost like I'm fine with it. But if my one night I had a sleep where my deep sleep was just 30 minutes and overall I had slept for more than 6.5 hours,
mm-hmm.
but still I was not so well rested. Now I feel, apart from being very insightful in a scientific manner, it is spiritually also so meaningful, because what rejuvenates us is actually when we are one with our true self, which Swami says is in your deep sleep state. So the deep sleep is what refreshes us, and you know, it possibly gives us an understanding as to how is it that the yogis spend the whole day by just sleeping for 3 hours. You know, if I am feeling great with just 1 hour of deep sleep, if there is a method in which I can directly go into deep sleep state, then 1 hour, 1.5 hour is enough to have me rejuvenated. No wonder that the yogis manage with only 3 hours, 4 hours of sleep. You know, so it gives so many thoughts, and I just thought of sharing this when the matter of deep sleep came in. At this point, dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break. So don't go away anywhere, because coming back, we will continue some of the doubts that Dr. Hislop had when Swami gave this explanation about wanting peace and how to get peace through the answering of the question, who am I, or through love for God. We'll take a quick little break and be back after that.
Omkar Swarupa. ओंकार स्वरूपा सद्गुरु समर्था, ओंकार स्वरूपा सद्गुरु समर्था, अनाथाचा नाथा तुझ नमो आनंद सागर त्रैलोक्या आधार गुरु राव रवि शशि अग्नि मेणति जा रूपा रवि शशि अग्नि मेणति जा रूपा स्वप्रकाश रूपा नेणे वेद स्वप्रकाश रूपा नेणे प्रकाश रूपाने वेद स्वप्रकाश रूपा तुझ नमो
Just before the break, we were talking about Swami's response to the visitor who wanted to know about peace. As Swami gives the response, Hislop asks, Swami, one understands this and has for some time. But when does intellectual comprehension change to reality? I feel like smiling now because, you know, 2-3 times while explaining or having the discussion before the break, I remember mentioning that if not experientially, at least intellectually. If not experientially, at least intellectually. And that is precisely the question. Of course, we had read this before, but it was definitely spontaneous on my part to state it that if not experientially, at least intellectually. And right away, Hislop is asking that question from Swami, that, Swami, when does this intellectual comprehension of this whole idea change into reality? And here we should, anyway, always we should, but here definitely should focus on the answer that Swami gives, because Swami says, It will become reality only when you practice it intensely. You read too much. You do not have to practice all that you read. Take one or two things to practice and then it will become a reality to you. When you go to the hospital, there are so many medicines. You do not have to take all the medicines, just the ones that are needed for your malady. You do not have to eat all the medicines. Whatever kind of spiritual practice you sincerely want to do, you just take that medicine. Do not collect all the other things. Because too much of this book knowledge just leads to doubts and confusion. You get too many doubts asking what is this, what is that, what is this, and you waste a lot of time in this conflict.
Now, Swami is saying this only reminds you of, you know, nowadays when you see the TV or you get so many WhatsApp forwards of, you know, eat this and then you'll lose weight, or you start eating this and then this health problem will be taken care of. Start eating this raw vegetable and then you'll not get cancer and all of that. You know, one thing is,
you know what, somebody says drink more coffee, you won't get cancer. 2 days later I got a thing which said coffee causes cancer. I really don't know what to do now. Whether I drink coffee or not, I think I'm destined to suffer from cancer.
Right. You know, the thing with all of these advices which come, it might all be true for that matter, but the thing is, none of them will work by you trying it out for 1 or 2 days. Each one of that, you know, any of the dietary restrictions, if somebody says that you eat cucumber and you'll never have a liver problem, let's say, I mean, please dear listeners, don't take it seriously. I'm just saying that if some advice is there like that, I'm sure it means that you have to do that for a few years and only then it'll work.
Not over the next 2 days.
Right, and the problem with us is we hear so many of that and we get instantly inspired or instantly want to try it out, but it never works like that, and you'll have to probably dedicate a couple of years to that suggestion, right? And that's why Swami is saying here, you know, you read so much and it happens to all of us. One day we read about some saint who has done meditation and we want to do meditation. Or we read about some saint who does nothing but bhajan and then we say that let's go and do bhajan. We put our feet in all of that. It doesn't work. I mean, it cumulatively it does work in a certain sense. But the reason why we don't see that kind of, and one more clarification, of course, is whenever Hislop says this, one understands this or one has been trying out this, it's a little old English where he is referring to himself, because he says that whatever Swami has explained in the sense of the deep sleep and I am that and I am God and all of that, he says, yeah, I know all of that. You know, I've read all of that. Intellectually, I understand that. Why am I not feeling that or experiencing that? That experience is not there. So then Swami says that, you know, that has to be practiced. In fact, I recall a very beautiful incident which happened. I think it was with Dr. Alreja. And most of us know Dr. Alreja. He used to have the fortune of, he was in the general hospital and he was fortunate to be Swami's personal doctor. Not that Swami ever needed one, but Swami would call him every day to check his BP and blood pressure and temperature and just to give him that opportunity, and he's got so many experiences doing that also.
Isn't that the case with any one of us involved with the avatar? I mean, like you said, Swami doesn't need a doctor. Honestly speaking, the avatar doesn't need a mother, doesn't need a father, doesn't need students, doesn't need missionaries, doesn't need anything at all. The avatar has come for our sake to confer on us joy. So I feel, yes, absolutely. I just thought of adding further to the statement that you made. The avatar has no need for the doctor, but Dr. Alreja was blessed to be his personal physician.
Right. And he's got many, many experiences in the process. Of course, he was also a very well-read man, very spiritual man. And I think he has even written about this in one of the Sanatan Sarthi articles, where he precisely this kind of a conversation is going on, where he is asking about some of these very deep spiritual questions. And Swami is explaining, just like probably how he is explaining to Hislop. And he says, Swami, all of this is intellectual. I can read all this from the book. But what about the experience? He asked Swami, that, you know, Swami, knowledge I can pick up from the book. I've come to you because I want to really experience that. So Swami looked at him and said, oh, you want experience. And, you know, Swami bent down and Swami actually whispers a mantra in his ear. And then he literally, if at all there is any switch which can turn you to Advaita mode, Swami kind of, you know, switches on that. And for the next few days, he sees nothing but Swami. He says wherever he is looking around, he is seeing only Swami. He is seeing his patients, he is seeing Swami. He is seeing his staff, he is seeing Swami. All the equipment in front of Swami. And, you know, he is literally in that state for 3 days. And
what then Swami whispered in his ear?
Yeah, and if you know that, Swami just tells him, Tattvamasi. Right?
Oh.
And when you think of it, how many times have you heard it from Swami himself? Swami has been thundering on,
from
the microphone during his discourses, Tattvamasi, Tattvamasi. In fact, there's one discourse which we went through as part of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. At least 10 times Swami says, Tattvamasi. Swami explains that Mahavakya. Swami keeps on saying, Tattvamasi, Tattvamasi, so many times. But it doesn't happen, but, you know, that is the potency of the Guru's words. When he wants to give you that experience, he can give you. But then Swami gives him that experience for 3 days and then it goes away. So he goes back to Swami and says, Swami, this is not fair. You took it away. And Swami said, no, you're a doctor. You have work to do. And this was only a sample which was given to you.
Mm.
You were just allowed to witness that state so that now you will strive for it. Right? And Swami takes it away. I think even Bhagya sir has a very similar
the same thing,
experience.
Yes. This is free sample. Now you like it, you have to purchase it. You know, you have to work for it. You have to pay for it through your sadhana.
Right. And Swami gives that experience. And, you know, after that Swami says, yeah, now that you know it, now you have to work towards it. In fact, this of course is the most supreme spiritual state. But many times we find that even in our devotion to Swami, you know, when you first come to Swami, that spontaneous burst of joy and the spontaneous burst of devotion and all that is there. But after some time, it actually goes away. Many, many devotees have experienced this, and I think most devotees have gone through that phase. You suddenly go through a period when you don't find any love in your heart. You don't find any kind of emotion stirring within you. I think the same thing holds good. Swami has given you that, you know, when you come in contact with God, Swami says that your deeper most self recognizes the divinity outside. But after that, you have to work towards it. You know, I've just given you so that you get attached to me, but then you have to work towards it. So nothing can take away the relevance of that spiritual sadhana that one has to perform.
And here is a very important advice that Swami gives about reading too much and getting too much bookish knowledge. You know, as it happens in any sphere today, there is an abundance of data and information all around the place. So there are thousands of gurus doling out all sorts of wisdom on all sorts of fields. And interestingly, Prem, not just in the spiritual field, in any field when you take up, finally it comes down to, you know, don't worry, don't read too much, you know, focus on something, do it repeatedly, you know, whether it is your sports, you know, how do you improve in badminton? When I've tried, I mean, if I look into my own personal life, I've tried to improve in my badminton. If I try to go online for advice, oh my God, there is so much. Finally, you choose one and stick to it. That's what it is, because finally that is what is going to improve your badminton rather than reading up so much about what so many have to say. As you said, everybody might have a valid point, but one person's method is clashing with the other person's method. And so, instead of sitting and debating why is this person telling that when that person is telling that, both are good players, what is this, you know? Instead of that, pick one thing and do it. That's what it is. Same thing. I try to improve my investing, you know. I want to do investment. And if you try to search for advice on where to invest and do your investments, you will get a plethora which makes you go mad. And finally, if you want to, you know, grow financially, it doesn't help if you sit and think, why is this person telling this when this person is saying, you know, both have done good investments, but this person's advice is countering that person's advice. You sit and debate on that. Those two people will keep growing while you remain where you are. Finally, what matters is practice. And that holds good even more so when it comes to the spiritual field. It is so important that we choose whom we want to follow and start following that. Honestly speaking, Prem, when I hear people speaking about this guru said that guru said this guru said that, I don't like it personally, because I just feel what is the need to go to a guru other than whom we have got. I am loyal to Swami and that's enough. So much so that I don't even turn to the previous part of Bhagwan Sat Sai Baba, which is Shirdi Sai Baba. I have my reverence for Shirdi Baba. I respect him. I regard him. But But I don't go in depth studying Shirdi Baba's teachings, because I feel this life is not enough to study Swami's teachings itself. And when it comes to his own teachings also, Swami says, you need not follow everything I have said. Follow any one thing. So finally it comes down to following one thing. You know, think of it this way. All my life, what I'm going to achieve depends on how well I follow one thing. To follow that one thing, is it necessary to read 1 million things? Is it not better to read only 1,000 things rather than 1 million things? I have got so much less baggage to sift through. Instead of 1,000, can I not read just 100 things? And hasn't Swami given us 100 things to read already? Why go to anybody else? This is my personal conviction and thought, and I am just sharing it aloud. Because Swami himself has given us so much that we cannot digest and practice everything. From that, let us choose and pick one. Swami is saying, just pick one. And follow it. What matters is following it. That is what sadhana is. Shraddha and saburi. Conviction and faith and perseverance. You know, I am convinced that bhajans is going to get me moksha. And therefore, for the next 3 days, I do bhajans. As you said, it is not going to help. Bhajans give moksha. Namasmarana give moksha. Seva gives moksha. Jnana, reading scriptures, doing that gives moksha. Everything will give. But I have to do it over a lifetime. Like you said about WhatsApp forwards, we do the same with spirituality also. It's like our WhatsApp forwards. I do my sadhana for 2 days, and after 3 days, my sadhana has changed. It is not sadhana then. That is not sadhana. It is just like a, you know, like a fashion that comes. Even a fashion that comes stays in vogue for a few months or a couple of years. It's a fad. What we are doing is spiritual fads, that's all. Now I have heard a bhajan singer come and speak about his 10-year journey or 15-year journey with Swami. I am inspired. So over the next 10 days I do bhajans. Then comes somebody who shares his experience about how he went in the quest of who am I, and over 30 years had that experience. And I also decide that I leave aside this bhajans, I do this. If I keep hopping like this, hopping, stepping and jumping, where will I land up? I'll end up being a monkey. That's why Swami says, don't be a monkey mind, be mankind. I think that is what we have to focus on, and that is what Swami is saying here. In order for it to become a reality, you have to practice it, and not just practice it normally. Swami says practice it intensely. That intensity is what Shraddha is about. The practice is what Saburi is about. Intensely practice means have Shraddha and Saburi. And that is the advice Swami gives as a spiritual doctor to Dr. Hislop.
The important thing is, you know, it's probably not wrong to, you know, want to try all of these different things. Even if you're talking about somebody who is very, very focused on what Swami says, I've seen this with a lot of people. You know, they will listen to probably one of your shows, and then they'll listen to another show. They will listen to a conversation with another devotee, see some interview or a talk on YouTube. It's the same Swami, but Swami gives different advice to different people. It is not wrong that we want to try out all of those things, because it is actually our earnestness which is expressing as restlessness in a way, if you ask me. You know, I really want to go close to Swami, and I'm desperate to know what is best. Right? So if Arvind comes and tells me something, I want to take that. And tomorrow if somebody else, Bishu or Prem or somebody else comes, I want to take that also, because I'm desperate to get closer to Swami. The problem is, you know, that eagerness or earnestness should not express as restlessness, and that's why Shraddha has to be coupled with Saburi. That Saburi is that patience and perseverance which Swami often speaks about. So yes, it is your earnestness which is expressing as you looking at everything and everybody and trying to grab as much as possible. It is not wrong in that sense. But if you want to see some change, that's what Swami is saying here. You pick up whatever you read. You know, it's not wrong in reading. Read. But then pick up something and try it out in your life. And Swami would often say this, especially when he's talking about a guru. I mean, after all, for a dietary restriction that you have to follow, if you have to follow it for a few years, a spiritual practice has to be followed at least for a quarter lifetime, if not more. It should be followed for a lifetime, but at least a quarter of a lifetime. So Swami says that whose word will you take? You know, you're going to take up somebody's word and follow that for a few decades. So that is why faith in the person who is telling you becomes very, very important. You know, you have to take that person's word and say that, okay, I completely trust this person and I'll take his word. And that's why all of this is combined, where devotion, love, faith, perseverance and the earnestness, all of that is connected in that manner, because without one, your pursuit will not be complete and you will get lost in the way if you're not having all of that together.
What I'm saying is a slightly different point, that over there when you say Prem, Bishu, Arvind, Amay, all said and done, at least these four names, they generally stick to Swami only. I'm just feeling that I go and start reading all the works of every other spiritual master, that person, this person, because for Saburi, as you said, you need Shraddha, you need faith, you need loyalty, you need that confidence that this person will take me, that's done. It's like, and this is not something that is particular only to the spiritual field. If you have a company and you keep changing the CEO every 3 months, I don't think that company can do well. If you have a cricket team and you keep changing the captain every 3 months, we have seen such things happening to some of the teams in the past. That team doesn't do well. You need to entrust that responsibility. You're the captain of my ship. You're the captain of my team. You're the CEO of my company. You are the master of my life. And having done that, before you pick that, yes, examine, try out, experiment, check everything and then pick. But having picked, now hold on and show some faith. Because you only arrived at this pick after so much time. You know, there was a person who, exactly a couple of us, that Amay and myself, when we came in touch with this person, was saying that, see, you guys had the blessing of interacting physically with Swami. I didn't get that chance. Now in such and such a place, I have got a guru. Yes, I love Swami, but I've got this guru. Now this guru, she or he, you know, is guiding me, and I get that personal attention. I get to speak. I get the interview. I get, every time I go, I get to speak. So therefore, I'm feeling like I want to go there. What's wrong in that? And I remember Brother Amay so beautifully, he gave the advice. He said, nothing wrong in that. If you're convinced that that is the guru, that is the person who is going to take you, fantastic. But one thing, hold on. Hold on to that guru till the end of your life now. Okay? And then, you know, after that person left, he was just saying that, let us see, because Swami says it is your faith that does it. If you hold on, you will get it. You won't believe it, Prem. Within 9 months, that person is back saying, no, no, Swami is only good. No, no, nothing. Give up. Within 9 months, you gave up that guru. You felt that this guru is going to give you everything and he or she is already showing you all those. But in 9 months, you gave up. I mean, even if you give up in 9 years, it is not. Because as you said, sadhana is for a lifetime. Having done once till the end of this life, you should be pledged in your loyalty and your faith to that guru. That is why, in that context, I said that, you know, about changing gurus. Of course, you know, I may just like to go online and watch Jaggi Vasudev, because possibly I like the interesting manner in which he deals with questions. Or out of curiosity, I'm seeing something. But when I say, whether I see a Ravi Shankar or I see Mata Amritanandamayi or whatever, if I'm looking at whatever their videos or them for, say, speaking skills or, you know, other things, it's fine. But I feel I'm making a mistake if I think of getting spiritual insight from them, because I've already accepted my guru. I've already got my guru. And if I go there, it just means that I don't have faith in my guru. That's all it is. Having started to dig in a spot, let me dig till I get water there. If I change midway, it just shows that I'm ready to have 3-4 holes rather than one deep well with water.
Right. And at this point, actually, Hislop asked Swami that, you know, when Swami makes this reference that you have to listen to the doctor who's, you know, and accept the medicine. There are so many medicines, but you have to take the medicine which is suitable for your malady.
Mm.
And that's when Hislop asked, what does the supreme doctor say is the correct medicine for me? And Swami's answer is very, very direct and straight. Swami says, meditation. For in meditation, you first get sense control, and yoga will help you with the body. And when the mind is steady, concentration will come automatically. When you get such concentration, then you get peace of mind. So Swami is giving this direct instruction to Dr. Hislop. When he asks Swami, what should I do? What am I supposed to do? Mm. But, you know, sometimes we feel that even this is too general. You know, when Swami says, if you go and ask Swami, Swami, what sadhana should I do? Swami say, do bhajans and do seva. You will feel like, no, Swami, what sadhana should I do? No, what
something
should
special
I
you have to
do,
give me.
Right? You know, you should give me something which is different from what is to others.
Mm.
But I'm sure Hislop would have been very, very happy to hear this, because this is what he has been doing, as we have read, you know, how he comes to Swami. One of the ways by which he is drawn to spirituality is through meditation. He really enjoys that. And he would probably be very happy to know that, you know, he's on the right path. You know, he might not have come to Swami before, but at least he's initiated into what he's been doing. And, you know, that is, again, Swami's way of re-emphasizing this important thing that it doesn't matter what you do. It only matters how you do it and how sincerely you do it. You know, because Swami might say that, no, somebody else has initiated you. Somebody else has given you this mantra. In fact, some of the devotees have this experience. They would have got initiated by another guru and they would come to Swami. And, you know, one of the devotees asked Swami, should I put a sai in front of the mantra which has been given to my guru? Swami's like, for what? Right? What is the need for that? See, a mantra has been given to you and you have been doing it for so many years. Just because you have come to me now, why should you change that mantra? So even though it has been given by another guru, Swami is saying that it does not matter that you have to, necessary that you should change that. In fact, Swami would say that, see, thinking of Swami, if it makes you go into that meditative state more easily, you know, that is the case with most of us who are not initiated into meditation. In fact, when we were in school, I think we used to have these meditation teachers who would come and teach us meditation. And invariably, I mean, that is one of the beautiful differences between Swami's meditation and the meditation that, you know, those teachers used to teach us. They would give us a syllable and they will say that you have to start meditating on that. It'll be something like ka or gha or ma or something. It's just a syllable. The mantra is not even a mantra which is a, you know, an appellation towards any deity or something. It's just a syllable. Like somebody says that you can meditate on your thumb or you can meditate on a tumbler or whatever it is.
It's about just focusing your thoughts on one thing.
As Swami would say, it's from multi-pointedness to one-pointedness. But the beauty with Swami's meditation, if you read Swami's Dhyanavahini, Swami does not differentiate between japa and dhyana. That is the speciality of Swami's meditation. Japa is contemplating on a form and a name. And dhyana is meditation.
Japa is supposed to be the bhakti path and dhyana is supposed to be the jnana path.
Swami says, why think of an object or a, you know, meaningless syllable or a meaningless object when you can think of God with love? And Swami would say that when you have a form which you love or when you have a name which you love, you very spontaneously get into that thinking of that deity. It is not a task, right? When you do something which is so easily lovable, then it is no more something that you labor and you do. And that is the beauty of Swami's meditation. And I think in that sense, Dr. Hislop would have been very happy that Swami is not telling him that whatever you've been doing all this while is, you know, I mean, you have some gurus who will say that, oh, you've been doing only bhajans, you've been doing only this, all that is waste, all that is useless.
Start afresh.
Now we will put you on a rigorous sadhana, you know, regime or something like that.
You know, it reminds me of a very interesting experience. One of my classmates, his name is Ranganath Raju. And he had come to the studio. He keeps coming now and then. And because we are classmates, we meet up, catch up. And at that point in time, I was reading through some discourse. And one example that Swami had given had struck me. And so, because we always almost keep sharing about different experiences with Bhagwan and teachings with Swami, I just happened to tell him, hey Raju, look at this. It's a very interesting thing that Swami has given. So beautifully Swami has put it. And the example was, Swami is saying that when you want to learn how to ride a bicycle, you first go to the open field and you start jumping on the cycle and trying to learn to pedal it. But how many ever times you try to mount the cycle and ride it, you keep falling. But you don't worry, you just persevere with it, and one day you will learn the bicycle suddenly. And when you learn riding the bicycle, you can ride through the narrowest of streets, the most crowded roads, through the bazaar, through the open field, anywhere you can ride through. And that will stay with you, like even if you don't ride for the next few days, it's not that you would have forgotten, it will always stay with you. And then Swami goes on to say that meditation is also like that. In the beginning, however hard you try, you'll just not be able to meditate. You'll keep falling. You'll keep failing. But keep at it. Keep doing it regularly. Suddenly, there will be that moment of insight. There will be that enlightening moment when when you'll know how to be able to meditate, focus, concentrate, contemplate. And then once you learn that, Swami says, you will be able to meditate in the crowded room, in the where the dogs are barking, where fight is going, anything. It doesn't matter to you at all. You will be able to do it. And even though you don't do it regularly, you will still be able to get into that state whenever you wish. Till you learn that, you have to do it regularly. And then Swami says, when you're learning cycling, when you're learning how to ride the bicycle, you will have to hold on to the handlebars when you're learning. Of course, after you have mastered it, there are people who let go of the handlebars and just bicycle. They can do that. But when you are learning, it's important to hold the handlebars. Swami says, in the same way when you're meditating, in order to gain balance, hold on to the handlebars, one which is the name of the Lord, one which is the form of the Lord. You know, when the name of the Lord is, when you're focusing on the name of the Lord, you feel you're losing balance, get in the form of the Lord. You know, that's what you do. When you're falling towards the left, you pull on to the right side of the handle. And if you're falling towards the right, you pull on to the left side of the handle. So keep moving between the left and the right of the handle. In the same way, keep moving between the name and the form of the Lord. When you're focusing on the form of the Lord, if you feel you're getting distracted, bring in the name. If that is getting distracting, bring in the form. Keep moving between this and you'll get balance. So I just happened to, you know, share this with, I think this is some discourse in 1960s. So I just shared it with Ranganath Raju and, I don't know, he had goosebumps. He said, wow, this is amazing. What, Swami, what thrill. So I was also very happy with his example, but I could not understand the reason for him being so overwhelmed and thrilled and getting goosebumps and all that. And then this Ranganath Raju revealed that he had gone in for a kind of practice of meditation. One system of meditation over 10-15 days he had gone and he had intensely indulged in that meditation to do it. And he said that he had many benefits from that. But one thing he found it very hard is he had to meditate for hours in a day, 7-8 hours per day or more than that possibly. One thing he had difficulty was to meditate on nothing. He said, you have to meditate on nothing because the ultimate goal of meditation is you become thoughtless. And they begin with that, you know. And he said that to become thoughtless, if you start guiding a person to be thoughtless right away, I think that's quite thoughtless of you. That's what Raju was saying. And he said, it was so difficult for me. And at the end of 15 days, though I got other benefits, I never could manage to focus intensely on nothingness. Because I don't know how to focus on nothing. I can just focus on something. And he said, how I wish I had got this discourse, you know. How beautiful it is. And looking at his thrill and thrall, I just felt this is the difference between a person who has tried at least for 15 days versus a person like me who has not done it at all. I am only intellectually aroused and feeling thrilled. Here the person who is genuinely feeling like, oh my God, this is the thing, this is manna from heaven, this is the panacea for my problems. So I feel by a practice of just 15 days, my classmate was able to appreciate the wisdom and the, you know, how beautiful and easy Swami has made. And that is all the more reason why we should definitely start practicing, because how much ever we intellectually admire and appreciate or understand, in order to genuinely feel that thrill and thrall, we will have to start practicing it. And as I just said, even 15 days of practice is able to bring in some experience of that joy. Imagine how much 15 months or 15 weeks or 15 years of practice will be able to bring in that joy.
And that's precisely what Swami says here. You know, whatever you read, how much you are able to practice that. And you know, with Swami, one of the advantages that you have versus probably you going to a meditation course or something like that, you know, you know that this is the person who is finally going to give you that experience. As we said, by just chanting Tattvamasi in the ears of a person, he could give that experience. Mm. This is not the only one. There are so many people who have had this experience where Swami says something, touches something, and you know, just gives them a little bit of that bliss. Once you have such an experience, or even if you hear of an experience like that, you are absolutely certain that whenever I'm going to get that, he's the person who's going to grant me that. Mm. Why would I not believe his words? Why would I not take his words as the ultimate truth when he says that you do this, we'll get this? Right? I mean, if you don't, just thinking of the people who are absolutely clueless, you go to a guru who's teaching you meditation and he says that you should not think of anything else. Or you go to another guru and says, no, you should think of something and you should think of the syllable. Or somebody else who says that, no, you should chant Om. You probably have no clue what is going to work for you. Mm. And as you said, you know, how many years are you going to give and then later wonder whether it has worked or not. But here you have Swami whom you know. And that is one of the reasons why Swami has allowed us to know. It has been recorded and it has been passed on to us. It has been shared with us that many of these people have had these experiences. In fact, I think Raja Reddy also speaks of an experience like this. Phenomenal experience. I think it is there in the interview that he gave us, where Swami was talking about some philosophical concepts like this with three people in the interview room. I think it's not even the interview room, it's in Swami's room. Swami was sitting on the cot and these three people were there. And Swami was talking about all of this. And as Swami was talking to them, Swami had taken that small paper which Swami would give Vibhuti in. Mm. And Swami materializes Vibhuti. Somebody would hand a paper and Swami would make a small parcel packet. With that and pack it with that and give. So Swami just picked up that square paper and as he was talking, he was rolling it, you know, playfully, just doing something, keeping your hands busy or whatever it is. So Swami was talking to them about that and he was rolling it. And Mr. Raja Reddy said that suddenly they realized that that roll of paper had actually become something like a stylus or a pen or something like that made of ivory, you know, with a white stylus, if you can think of something like that.
Mm.
And then Swami said, I will tell you how it works or, you know, whatever Swami is explaining about the idea of oneness and all that. Swami said, I'll tell you. And Swami called each one of those people and Swami chanted a mantra in their mind and Swami wrote it on their tongue. Swami said, show your tongue and Swami wrote it.
Chanted in their ear or in their mind.
Uh-huh. Chanted in their ear, and wrote it on the tongue. Right?
With that stylus.
So Raja Reddy was saying that I don't know about the other two. I've not met them after that much. But I can tell you from my point of view that even today, if I chant that mantra and think of Swami, within few minutes, I will be completely lost to the world around me. He said, you know, what more proof that you want that here is the person who can actually give you what you're striving for. You know, if you're doing bhajans, if you're doing meditation, if you're doing seva, whatever it is, you know that he's the person who's going to finally grant it to you. Why would you not listen to his words? So whatever it is, you know, among the hundreds and thousands of discourses that Swami said, whatever I think appeals to us, we can take it with the full confidence that by doing this, I can get the ultimate. We need not be clouded by what others say. Somebody might come and say, what, you're doing only bhajans. Actually, seva is the thing.
Who are you? How do you know? I mean,
correct. Or somebody says that, oh, you're doing seva all the time. You have to sit and do bhajans. You sit and do meditation. Because in my interview, Swami had told me that. I think it's not necessary. Anything that Swami has told, as Swami is saying that anything, just pick up anything and with dedication, just follow it. You will reach.
That, dear listeners, is the power of the avatar. The avatars, every word is a mantra and therefore it doesn't matter which word we follow. What matters is whether we follow it or not and whether we follow it on a sustained, persevering basis. Because we spoke a little bit about meditation, we came across so many discourses in which Swami has given advice and tips to those who would like to pursue meditation. And possibly Prem and me will discuss and we can take it up as a separate satsang topic itself. We will not go into that now because now we will stick to just the conversation that Dr. Hislop is having with Swami. But even to stick to that, we'll have to wait till next week because the clock in our studios is showing 1:59. It's time for the afternoon satsang to come to a close today. We are grateful to Swami for all the love, the wisdom, the energy, the enthusiasm and everything in life that he has been showering on us, offering this at his lotus feet and telling all of you dear listeners that if you wish to contribute in any manner, your thoughts, your feedback, your ideas, your experience, you can do so by writing to us at listener@radiosai.org. So, till next week, enjoy this a song on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love.
అరుణాచల శివ అరుణాచల శివ అరుణాచల శివ అరుణ శివ
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 అక్షయలింగ ఆత్మలింగ
అక్షయలింగ ఆత్మలింగ
అక్షయలింగ ఆత్మలింగ
అక్షయలింగ ఆత్మలింగ
తేజోమయ విగ్రహ సుఖదాయక ఈశా ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక
ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక ఈశా ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక
ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక ఈశా ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక
ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక సాయి ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక
అరుణాచల శివ అరుణాచల శివ అరుణాచల శివ అరుణ శివ
అరుణాచల శివ అరుణాచల శివ అరుణాచల శివ అరుణ శివ
అక్షయలింగ ఆత్మలింగ
అక్షయలింగ ఆత్మలింగ
తేజోమయ విగ్రహలింగ
తేజోమయ విగ్రహ
సుఖదాయక ఈశా ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక
ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక ఈశా ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక
ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక సాయి ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక
ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక సాయి ఇహ పర సుఖదాయక
ఓం నమ శివాయ శివాయ నమో
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 నమ శివాయ శివాయ నమ
ఓం 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 నమ శివాయ
శివాయ నమో
ఓం నమ శివాయ శివాయ నమో